Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. I want to wish all of you a safe and happy new year after this tough year that we've been through, and here's hoping that 2021 will be a better year for us all. We open our show today with a look back at the top stories of 2020 that impacted people across East County, a turbulent year marked by the resignation of a congressman, a global pandemic, quarantines, and lockdowns that affected us all, racial justice protests, wildfires, and some of the most contentious elections on record. It was a year that brought out both the best and the worst in humanity locally, where many people rallied to help those in need. Then, we'll have a bulletin on a missing woman with dementia, whose friends and neighbors up at Butterfield Ranch near Anza Borrego are asking for public help to bring her safely home. On our health report, we'll have the latest local news on COVID-19. That includes discovery of a faster-spreading variant of the virus first found in England and now in San Diego, and some new grants to help struggling businesses as the stay-home order has been extended due to surging cases and overflowing hospital ICU units. We'll also have a report on a freedom rally held in El Cajon with prominent speakers including Congressman-elect Darrell Issa, Mayor Bill Wells, and State Senator Brian Jones, all calling for businesses to reopen. Some speakers went farther, urging people to discard masks and spreading dangerous misinformation, and we'll have details. Nurses at Palomar Healthcare held a protest against a waiver of nurse-to-patient ratios that they say puts patient safety at risk. Now, there is something to cheer about this week. The Padres just picked up two top pitchers in trade, including last year's Cy Young Award winner and a Cy Young runner-up. Catch the details on our sports report. East County Assemblywoman Shirley Weber has been appointed to be California's new Secretary of State, one of several key appointments, including Alex Padilla as our new California Senator to replace Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. Learn more about these folk and who is posed to fill Shirley Weber's legislative seat on today's show. Now, on the second half of our show today, we are honored to have a newsmaker interview with Erica Pinto, chairwoman of the Hamul Indian Village and the new chair of the Southern California Indian Health Council. She'll be talking about health issues facing Native Americans and more. Plus, she'll share her reactions to President-elect Joe Biden's appointment of the first Native American to head up the U.S. Department of the Interior, pending Senate confirmation. Then we'll have a weather outlook for our region after the recent snowfall in our local mountains. And from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines today, including yet another election challenge, this one from House Republicans, and the latest on the battle over stimulus checks in the U.S. Senate. Plus, we'll tell you about a brand new park just opened in Casa de Oro. And finally, hear why the County Fire Authority is starting its new year with a new name. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. 2020 was a year like no other, around the world and here in East County. This is Miriam Raftery with a look back at some of the top stories. The year opened in January with the resignation of Congressman Duncan Hunter, leaving his seat vacant for a full year after he pleaded guilty to spending campaign contributions for personal use. Also in January, the first two cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in Southern California. In February, county supervisors declared a local emergency due to the novel coronavirus. Nationally, all eyes were on Washington, D.C. in February, where the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump ended in acquittal by the Senate. The March primary election narrowed the field to fill two congressional seats locally after Susan Davis announced her retirement, after Duncan Hunter resigned. The primary also set up a race between Joel Anderson and Steve Voss to replace Supervisor Diane Jacob, who is leaving office due to term limits. On March 11th, the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic. 2 days later, President Trump declared a national emergency. And soon after, the state and county ordered shutdown of schools and businesses, ordering residents to stay home except for essential business. In April, East County Magazine began focusing our reporting on those suffering during the pandemic. We looked at the impacts on farmers, small businesses, minorities, and the homeless. But some people chafed at the restrictions, holding the first of many freedom rallies calling for everything to reopen. Racial justice protests were the top story in May after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Protests occurred across our region, and in La Mesa, a riot resulted in looting of many businesses and the burning down of two banks and a historic building. We saw the worst side of human nature in 2020, but also the best. Hundreds of La Mesa residents rallied to clean up, rebuild, and raise funds to help those hurt by the riot. And in Santee, after viral videos showed shoppers in a KKK mask and swastikas, and clashes occurred between protesters and defender groups, some residents held a Santee Loves rally to bring a message of inclusiveness. We also saw East County residents making masks in May and June to donate to healthcare workers, Native American tribes, and refugees camped south of the border. Also in June, local cities passed ordinances to help businesses move outside, and Kumeyaay Indians held protests seeking to halt construction of the border wall over sacred sites. In July, East County Magazine special reports looked at impacts of the pandemic on nonprofits that were struggling to survive without fundraising events or programs, such as the YMCA and the East County Boys and Girls Club and Noah's Homes. We covered the food bank's efforts to meet growing needs to feed the hungry. Local cities rolled out CARES Act relief to help people pay their rent and utilities, as well as aid small businesses. But there was never enough to help so many in need at one time. Amare Johnson filed a lawsuit against La Mesa over a controversial stop at the trolley, widely viewed as racial profiling, and the officer involved was fired following an investigation. Christian Youth Theater went dark, shutting down all local operations after allegations of sexual abuse. During triple-digit heat in August, SDG&E initiated widespread power outages to prevent fires, but sparked anger among rural residents who said their safety was put at risk. El Cajon and La Mesa took steps forward to help the homeless with sleeping cabins and moving toward a Citizens Committee on Homelessness. La Mesa began its search for a new police chief after the retirement of Walt Vasquez. At the Democratic and Republican National Conventions in August, Joe Biden and Donald Trump accepted their party nominations. Biden in a virtual convention held remotely, Trump with large crowds not wearing masks despite the pandemic that was raging. The hottest local story in September was the Valley Fire, which burned about 30 homes near Alpine, but could have been far worse as fire officials feared that fierce Santa Ana winds could push the fire west into San Diego. But fortunately, they got a break from Mother Nature. With candidates unable to campaign in person, East County Magazine held virtual candidate forums in September and October for all local city council and mayoral races in East County, as well as our county supervisor race. We also partnered with the League of Women Voters to bring you a congressional forum. The Padres advanced to postseason play, giving fans something to cheer about, if only briefly. Santee City Council approved Finita Ranch, a major housing development, in late September, and in October, environmentalists sued to block the project and turned in enough signatures to put overturning the decision on a future ballot. Santee citizens also passed a separate measure in November to give the people a vote on all future projects that exceed general plan requirements. Statewide, wildfires scorched over 4 million acres in California, setting a new record by October. In November, rising COVID cases pushed San Diego into the state's purple tier, forcing a new stay-home order and shutdown of restaurants. For in-person dining, as well as gyms, salons, and some other businesses that had been struggling at limited capacity for much of the year. In November, the FBI announced arrests for arson in the burning of buildings during the La Mesa riot. Elections in November brought sweeping changes to East County and the nation. Here, that included two new congressional representatives, Republican Daryl Issa and Democrat Sarah Jacobs, as well as a new supervisor, Joel Anderson. Lemon Grove Councilman David Arambula and La Mesa Councilwoman Christina Licio lost their seats to newcomers Liana LeBaron and Jack Hsu, both Democrats, and new faces on the councils. East County also had several bizarre election outcomes, including a tie race in Warner Springs School Board, decided by a coin toss. A recount in Santee, where Dustin Trotter won a council seat by just 5 votes over Sam Hurst, and a Ramona Water District Board race won by a candidate who died several weeks before the election, and that seat was filled by appointment. Nationally, the presidential election started out as a nail-biter but ended with Joe Biden receiving 7 million more votes than Donald Trump and certification by the Electoral College after numerous lawsuits filed by Trump's lawyers claiming fraud were thrown out of court for lack of evidence. In December, planned power outages during frigid temperatures left tens of thousands of residents in mountain and rural areas frosted by the action, which SDG&E said was done to prevent fires, with fire season now year-round due to climate change. Firefighters contained the Willows fire in December, which destroyed a home in Rancho San Diego and caused a long, tense night for many more residents who were evacuated. In December, the FAA reversed its approval of the Campo Wind Project, blocking it for now. The controversial project was opposed by neighbors, environmentalists, and many Campo tribal members. Governor Gavin Newsom appointed local Assemblywoman Shirley Weber to be the next Secretary of State, after naming Secretary of State Alex Padilla to fill the Senate seat left vacant by Kamala Harris, the Vice President-elect. Weber's daughter, La Mesa Councilwoman Akila Weber, announced that she will run for her mother's seat in the legislature. Hospital ICU bed capacity dropped to zero in December across our region as many people defied shutdown orders to attend holiday gatherings or keep businesses open. By December, more than 1 in 1,000 Americans had died of COVID, and well over 300,000 dead total, more than any war in U.S. history. President Trump pardoned Duncan Hunter and his wife Margaret for their crimes, sparing the former congressman from serving any time in prison. The Padres picked up 2 pitchers in postseason trades in December, including a Cy Young Award winner and a Cy Young runner-up, raising hopes of pennant fever this year. The president signed a new relief bill in December, but Senate leader Mitch McConnell refused to allow a vote on increasing relief payments from $600 to $1,200 per person at year's end, becoming the Grinch who stole Christmas. The FDA approved 2 vaccines in December for COVID-19, and local health care workers began receiving the vaccines in December, bringing hope for an end to lockdowns and the pandemic in 2021.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Missing Persons Bulletin. Friends and neighbors are asking for public help to find Diane Mattingly, a 64-year-old woman with dementia. She was last seen on December 12th at her home in the Buttersfield Ranch RV Resort near Anza Borrego. The sheriff has not sent a missing persons report to the media. Pastor Brian Keller at Butterfield Community Church says deputies are, quote, dragging their feet, end quote, adding that he believes more should be done, Times of San Diego reports. Besides dementia, Mattingly is at risk due to other health conditions, as well as freezing temperatures in the mountain areas if she set out on foot. A caregiver for Mattingly says the elderly woman asked to go to Vegas for New Year's shortly before she disappeared. According to Lieutenant Ricardo Lopez with the Sheriff's Department, Mattingly was looking for a ride to Ramona or El Cajon and may have been seen December 13th walking in the Shelter Valley area. He says there is no indication of foul play, adding that law enforcement agencies in areas she's been known to frequent have been notified. Another deputy reportedly checked local hospitals but found no record that she had been admitted. But Pastor Keller is frustrated by the lack of follow-up, so he's reached out to local TV stations and social media to circulate photos taken of her the day before she went missing. He says he's doing everything he can short of a search party and is thinking of doing that too, since as of yet, the sheriff has failed to mount a search and rescue effort. We care about her, he says, adding, we don't know what else to do.
This is Miriam Raftery with the latest local updates on the coronavirus. A fast-spreading new strain of COVID-19, first found in the United Kingdom, has been confirmed in San Diego County in a 30-year-old man who has not traveled outside of the region, leading to concerns that there are more cases here. In the final week of the year, thousands of new cases of COVID-19 were reported daily, and on December 31st, a record 62 deaths were reported in San Diego County from the virus. San Diego's newly elected mayor, Todd Gloria, has announced crackdowns on businesses flagrantly violating shutdown rules, but he also said he wants to create an economic recovery plan that will provide the most help to business sectors that have suffered the most severe impacts. Elsewhere in the county, enforcement is much more spotty. Governor Gavin Newsom has extended the stay-home order for our region for another 3 weeks, as Southern California's ICU capacity remains at 0%. In San Diego County, some hospitals are canceling organ transplants and cancer surgeries due to a lack of beds. The state also announced a new round of small business COVID-19 relief grants, which nonprofits are also eligible to apply for. The grants range from $5,000 to $25,000. Registration is now open and runs through January 8th. To apply for these grants or get more information, you can visit CAReliefGrant.com. Again, that website is CAReliefGrant.com.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A rally titled All I Want for Christmas is Freedom was held on Monday, December 21st at El Cajon Centennial Plaza, drawing about 150 people and speakers, including prominent politicians who called for a lifting of pandemic shutdowns that are hurting businesses. The rally was held as hospital ICU units filled to capacity across Southern California after 18 million people in the United States have contracted COVID-19 and 323,000 Americans have died. Despite a tenfold increase in COVID cases locally since early November, most speakers and people attending the rally did not wear masks. Many urged outright defiance of public health rules, with some arguing that it's unfair to allow big box retailers such as Walmart and Target to stay open, despite being tied to outbreaks, while small businesses such as hair salons and restaurants are forced to close. Congressman-elect Daryl Issa stated, "I'm here to celebrate the reopening of our state, reopening of this great city." He praised El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells as a hero for refusing to have his city enforce shutdown orders or other public health mandates. Mayor Wells received backlash from other cities in San Diego County, in addition to public health officials and various state departments, for refusing to enforce the recent quarantine measures. Despite the dangers to public health from this action, Mayor Wells told the crowd, "There are more important things in life than being afraid to die." He added, "Sometimes people say I'm a bad guy because I don't care about people dying. But I ask them, why do other lives not count? Why do lives lost from suicide not count? Why do lives lost to overdose not count? Why are families ruined by divorce rates that are skyrocketing not count?" He then called for people to stand up against this evil that has been perpetrated upon us, referring to governmental public health mandates. State Senator Brian Jones, who tested positive for COVID-19 earlier this fall, promised to fight in the legislature to restrict Governor Newsom's power, adding, "We just need to reopen San Diego." Alex Pellegrino, former president of the Entrepreneur Association of San Diego, urged people to support businesses that have stayed open in defiance of public health orders. A minister named Rita, known as the Compton Conservative, said her church has defied shutdown orders and remained open. Her radical speech referred to the governor as the devil's puppet and stated, "The coronavirus ain't our problem. We are in a spiritual warfare," she said, adding, "As Christians, we have no business bowing down to nobody that thinks they're a king." Some speakers spouted outright false information, such as claiming that masks don't work, despite evidence that they do, or claiming that asymptomatic patients can't spread COVID, when, according to the World Health Organization and the Centers for the Disease Control, a person who tests positive for COVID-19 can spread the virus for days before developing symptoms. The event also included vendors ranging from a booth with a petition to recall Governor Newsom to others selling products for holiday shoppers. East County Magazine asked Paul Heggie, CEO of the San Diego County Medical Society, to respond to comments made at the rally. He replied, "We understand people's frustration with the pandemic. The reality is that ICUs are overwhelmed, and we are in a particularly difficult and dangerous period in dealing with COVID-19. No one is more exhausted than healthcare workers after dealing with this 9-month-long pandemic. We ask everyone to help us get through this together by isolating at home and limiting travel in order to protect yourself and your loved ones. But he added, with the beginning arrival of vaccines, there is good cause for real hope for the near future. We need your help to get us all through this very tough time. Supervisor Diane Jacob said that while she believes some aspects of the state's public health order are unfair and sympathizes with the tremendous burden this is having on businesses and workers, regardless of any objection with a public health order, the significant flare-up of cases and the impact on our hospitals is alarming right now, and we should all be taking this seriously. Despite those risks, restaurant owner Alondra Ruiz insisted that businesses should open up, contending that shutdowns infringe on their rights. He concluded, "Every action I will continue to take regarding liberty will be with the famous words in mind of Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death." Unfortunately, business owners that defy public health orders, along with their workers and customers, run a very good chance of getting both liberty and death. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
At KNSJ, our mission is to reflect voices and views across our diverse region. That's why our programming includes Native American news, Spanish language programming, coverage of issues facing immigrants, refugees, the homeless, working people, inner city and rural residents, and others whose voices are too often not heard in other media. Please help support and sustain KNSJ, your network for social justice, by donating or making a sustaining pledge at www.knsj.org.
Registered nurses and caregivers held a car caravan on Wednesday to protest Palomar Health's waiver of nurse-to-patient ratios. The district applied for the waiver, which was approved Tuesday by the California Department of Health due to the COVID-19 surge. But nurses contend that the change is dangerous for patient safety. State law requires one nurse for every two patients in an intensive care unit. The waiver would allow three patients, two mid-level, and one ICU patient per nurse. The action comes just after the California Office of Emergency Service announced plans to activate a vacant floor of Palomar Medical Center to handle COVID-19 patients. National Guard members arrived Wednesday to complete a build-out of the surge unit, which was begun earlier this year. Hospital ICUs across Southern California are completely full, with zero capacity due to COVID cases that have increased tenfold locally since early November. CNN reports that one of every 1,000 Americans have now died of COVID-19. San Diego County reported 22 deaths last week from COVID-19, including patients ranging in age from their 30s to 90s. But the death toll could become even worse as hospitals run out of ICU beds, trained nurses, and even oxygen. Pasita Balkin, representative of the Caregiver and Healthcare Employees Union, says, quote, "We must put patient safety first." She wants the hospital to invest in patient care instead of giving nurses more patients to care for. Sue Phillips, a registered nurse, says, quote, "We are already exhausted. A waiver does not help anyone." In Northern California, Sutter Health California Pacific Medical Center and the UCSF Medical Center rescinded their applications for state waivers of nurse-to-patient ratios after protests by the California Healthcare Employees Union. Nurses also contend that Palomar has been mixing COVID-19 and non-COVID patients, worsening unsafe conditions, and lacking enough personal protective equipment, or PPE. Palomar Health spokesman Daniel Acosta has stated, quote, "Palomar Health rejects the nurses' union contention of unsafe patient conditions and inadequate PPE. The COVID surge and staffing shortages are not limited to Palomar Health." Chris Van Gorder, chief executive officer at Scripps Health, spoke at a county health briefing Wednesday, where he read a letter from an emergency room physician voicing dismay at people flocking to malls and restaurants in defiance of stay-home orders. The doctor warned, "Soon we could be in a situation like Italy or New York City," end quote, where an overstressed medical system due to COVID-19 resulted in many people dying who could have been saved. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Finally, here's something to cheer about in 2020. In one of the biggest off-season moves the Padres have ever made, the team signed top starting pitchers Blake Snell from the Tampa Bay Rays and Yu Darvish from the Chicago Cubs, ESPN reports. Snell was the American League's Cy Young Award winner in 2018 with a 3.2 earned run average in five major league seasons. Darvish had a low ERA of just 2.01 this year and was named runner-up for the Cy Young Award. The addition of two pitching aces raises hopes that the Padres may have what it takes to reach the playoffs in 2021 and perhaps even the World Series. The Padres also picked up catcher Victor Caratini. In return for Snell, the Rays will receive pitching prospects Luis Patino and Cole Wilcox, as well as catchers Francisco Mejia and Blake Hunt. In return for Darvish, the Cubs will get pitcher Zach Davies, outfielding prospects Owen Cassie, Israel Mina, and shortstop prospects Reggie Preciado and Yason Santana. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
California will soon have a new U.S. Senator and a new Secretary of State, as well as a new Attorney General. With Senator Kamala Harris soon to be the new Vice President when Joe Biden takes office on January 20th, Governor Gavin Newsom has appointed Secretary of State Alex Padilla to fill the vacancy left by Harris and serve as California's new U.S. Senator. Padilla, the son of Mexican immigrants, will be the first Latino to represent California in the U.S. Senate and the first Southern California senator in nearly 30 years. To fill the vacancy in the Secretary of State office, Governor Newsom has appointed Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, whose district includes parts of San Diego and East County. The daughter of sharecroppers once denied the right to vote, she went on to earn a Ph.D. and served as president of the San Diego Board of Education before being elected to the legislature. She will be the first African-American woman to serve as California's Secretary of State, ensuring voting rights for all Californians. Her appointment means a special election will be held to fill Dr. Weber's assembly seat. And her daughter, La Mesa Councilwoman Akilah Weber, has announced that she plans to run to fill her mother's seat. Now, since President-elect Joe Biden also tapped California's Attorney General Javier Becerra to head up the Federal Health and Human Services Department, assuming the U.S. Senate confirms that appointment, Governor Newsom will also have the opportunity to appoint a replacement to fill California's Attorney General position, but he has not yet announced who that will be. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Erica Pinto, the first woman chair of the Hamul Indian Village and the newly elected chair of the Southern California Indian Health Council. She was also recently honored with the Warrior Award, the American Indian Chamber of Commerce's highest honor for her leadership to improve the lives of Native people. Erica, welcome to the show, and it's such an honor to have you here today with us.
Thank you, Miriam. I can remember when I was first elected as chairwoman back in 2015. I did have a real short interview with you back then, so it's good to join you again.
Well, a lot has happened since then. So let's start, though, if we could. I want to get your reaction to the breaking news out of Washington, D.C. this week about President-elect Biden nominating the first Native American, a woman, Deb Haaland, as the Secretary of the Interior. I understand that you've met her. Tell us your reaction to this news.
Well, I knew she was going to be selected. I just had a feeling in my heart. I know that President-elect Joe Biden wants a diverse cabinet, and he's doing such a phenomenal job at making sure, you know, every person is covered in the White House cabinet. Deb Haaland, Congresswoman Deb Haaland, I have run into her a few times. I've met her a couple times. I've spoken with her on the phone also. She is an exceptional choice. She will make us proud. She's going to represent the people well. And I'm so proud. It's a historic moment. I think all of Indian country agrees with me when we say that he is just creating an awesome cabinet and she's the best choice.
Well, that's very encouraging to hear. Mm-hmm. So as far as the Southern California Indian Health Council that you're now the chair of, mm-hmm. can you give our listeners a little bit of background on it? How many clinics does that cover? Mm-hmm. How many tribal members does it provide health care for in Southern California and here in San Diego County?
Well, first, thank you for having me here to speak about Southern Indian Health Council. Any way we can get them out is always a good publicity for them. Southern Indian Health Council services most of East County, American Indians, and non-American Indians who live in the community of East County. So they have a clinic in Alpine. Mm-hmm. They also have another satellite clinic in Campo on the Campo Indian Reservation. They have a Boys and Girls Club on La Posta Indian Reservation. It's a great organization, services seven consortium tribes of the East County. And each tribe has two representatives on the board. So it's a total of 14 board members, mix of alternates and delegates. And I had the pleasure of being elected last month. I don't fall into my role until January of 2021, but I've been on the board for since 2004. I've been on and off and more consistently in the last 7 years. Yeah. But this is such a much needed service to the community. American Indians have many challenges, many health challenges. And so
tell us what some of your goals are as the new chair.
First and foremost, it's always about finding ways to improve our healthcare, finding ways and opportunities that we could get the best doctors, retain the best doctors. That's been one of our challenges is holding on to our doctors, because Campo is pretty far out there. You know, Alpine is a little bit remote, but not as far as Campo. And so we have to make, you know, people want to be out there and work for this organization, which it's a fabulous organization. Challenges we run into too are funding. You know, it just seems every year our funding from IHS gets cut, and we need that funding to bring services to our people. Like I said, that one of the most vulnerable populations, you know, with diabetes and obesity and substance abuse. So we need this kind of service to maintain ourselves and our health.
Yeah, I know those have all been causes that you've long championed. Yes. And now, in addition to all of that, we have the COVID-19 pandemic. And I was just reading today, U.S. News and World Report had a troubling report about the death rate from COVID-19 nationally is twice as high among Native Americans as among white people. Mm-hmm. Is that disparity occurring in the Southern California region? And if so, what can be done about it?
I don't see it occurring in the Southern California region. I do see it in other states, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But here we've been so fortunate to be having our clinic to be able to go to and get tested if we start feeling any sort of symptoms. But thankfully, we haven't been impacted.
Are the clinics here getting enough of the personal protective equipment that they need, the tests, I don't know if they have ventilators there, but whatever else they need beyond money, you know, the actual supplies and things during this?
Thank you for asking that. We do have enough PPE. We have staff there that's ready to help us. We do things different now, where if I have an appointment up there, I have to go and stay in my car and, you know, get checked out and call in first and do a telehealth visit first. So everything's a lot different, but we do have the proper PPE to maintain ourselves.
That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. How many cases of COVID have occurred locally, do you know, on the local reservations or among local, I guess, non-reservation Indians as well?
Gosh, I don't have a number off the top of my head as far as the American Indians, but I know, like I said, fortunately, we have not been hit as hard as we were thinking we would be hit.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Maybe the remote locations of some of the reservations may be an advantage in a way. They're not in those crowded urban areas where it's spreading so fast.
Well, you know, I think we know that our population is vulnerable. So I know a lot of the tribal leaders, you know, take great caution and they make sure that their communities are safe. And they, mm-hmm. I know one of my good friends who's a chairwoman refuses to travel anywhere. She does everything on Zoom, shopping on Zoom, or shopping. You can't shop on Zoom, but you shop online. And mm-hmm. so I just think we have a tendency to take this more serious. you know, than some people that I've seen on social media. But there's a reason why we do that, because we could be impacted, you know, if it spreads like wildfire in our community.
Well, and especially now with the ICU unit, they're at 0% capacity for Southern California, and our local hospitals are now turning ambulances away in some cases. So it's really, you know, very serious. How is the pandemic impacting the tribes economically, Chairwoman? Can you tell us? I know it must be very difficult because they need their casinos and things open and the other businesses. It's not only about the jobs, but it's about bringing in revenues to pay for things like education and health care. But how are they balancing, you know, the economic need versus the health care concerns right now?
Well, I know the tribes have taken a hit economically through the closures. And I can't speak for any other tribe, but I can't speak for ourselves. And when we were hit, and our casinos are essential to our operation of tribal government, and as you mentioned, of healthcare and of just taking care of our communities. So we do believe that they are essential for our survival. And during the closures, we did take it upon ourselves to really delve into how can we open safely? How can we make sure our patrons are safe? How can we make sure our team members are safe, as well as our tribal members? We have 72 tribal members only at Hamul who are tribal members. So they are, in my eyes, what I focus on first and foremost. I focus on the business. I focus on the rest of the people that come onto the reservation. But I want to make sure my tribal members are safe. And so far, they are all very well. We took those 2 months of closure and we just put our heads down. We connected with Southern Indian Health Council, as well as other tribes. And we came up with a safe reopening plan that was blessed by the, I don't want to say blessed, we got input from Southern Indian Health Council, the medical director, as well as staff, who would come in and they would look at our document and they would say, oh, perhaps you should change this right here, or maybe it would be better if you did this. And we just worked nonstop in those 2 months to make sure everybody's protected. You know, we purchased things before opening, so when you walk into our casino, there's a thermal camera, so it can measure many people's temperatures at once. And if you have an elevated temperature, you will not be welcome, unfortunately, inside our casino, because, you know, go home and rest if you have an elevated temperature.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing.
Also good positive thing is that we have one entrance and one exit, so we can really get a handle on who's coming in and who's leaving, which is a good thing for us.
Very good. The vaccine, of course, is on the horizon. My daughter just got hers this week. She's working in a COVID-19 ward, actually, an ICU unit. So that's exciting. Are the tribes, do you think that most tribal members are going to be wanting to get the vaccine, or is there hesitation? I know in the Black community, we've heard some concerns that, you know, some people of color are concerned about it. How is that playing out from what you're hearing in the Native American community?
I actually do hear mixed reviews. You know, on one hand, everybody's blessed that this vaccine has come about and it's being delivered. Mm-hmm. But also on the other hand, there's some still lingering mistrust, you know, in that back many, many, many years ago, when vaccines were distributed amongst certain communities, it wasn't a good thing. And I don't know if you know this, but back in the 70s, there was, forced sterilizations of making women infertile.
Oh, it was horrible. I've heard about that. There's some real horror stories that have happened that are unforgivable.
And throughout the world, you know, there's just been some incidences that occurred like that does make people feel a little hesitant in trusting something like a vaccination. But I'm thinking that it will help. Dr. Fauci, you know, has come out and spoke about this, and we do have a tendency to trust science. I do at least. So it could be a good thing. My mom herself said she's going to take the vaccine. I'm open to take the vaccine. I wonder, how's your daughter faring? Is she in pain? Does she have any?
So far, just a sore arm from what I understand,
which you can get
from any vaccine. So far, so good. I guess we all have to weigh whatever risk the vaccine may carry versus the risk of contracting COVID-19.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's important. Back to the Hamul Casino for a moment. Eventually, we'll be out of this pandemic, hopefully with the vaccine, especially on the horizon, maybe in a few months, we can get life back to normal where more people will feel comfortable going out and going back to holding events and things. But I understand that the Humboldt Casino has a really exciting new rooftop venue that they've added. Tell us about that.
Well, this rooftop is gorgeous. It has spectacular views of land to the south of us, which is California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So you see vast mountains and hills, and right now it's a little brown because we had lack of rain, but it's still beautiful nonetheless. And you could see some wildlife there, some coyotes and deer, and I think someone saw a bobcat. But it's gorgeous. This is a space that's available for events to be held, weddings, you know, parties. Mm-hmm. It's outdoors. The roof actually retracts to so you can see the sky. But if it rains and you're having an event, you can close it up. And it's just a gorgeous event. I was there last night taking a look at it. It's a bit cool right now, but in the summer, it's gorgeous. And the windows can come down. And if you're looking for an event, Miriam, we're happy to host you. Please come out and check it out.
You're reading my mind. I was just thinking what a lovely place this would be when this is all done and we can go back to holding, you know, either fundraising events or bring our East County Dining Club out there and have your wonderful caterers. Maybe, you know, I think it's one of the most beautiful venues in East County. I've eaten at your steakhouse and enjoyed the views and all the wildlife. And I can only imagine even how much more expansive the views from the rooftop must be. So that's something that we can look forward to. And
very gorgeous. And I do look forward to hosting you out there and your East County Club.
Thank you. That's very kind. Tell us about your Warrior Award. What efforts were recognized with this great honor?
Gosh, I really don't know what... I often talk with my mom and my uncle, who's a former chair, and we often talk about how the job that we do is not a job that we do for recognition or, you know, to be praised, because it's a quite challenging job. And, you know, I've turned gray a lot since the last 5 years and since the last I've spoken with you, but I love what I do. Maybe it shows I'm passionate about my people. I'm passionate about the job we do, and I want to improve lives all around. You know, not just my community, my tribal members, but the lives of the Humboldt community, the lives of the community that uses Southern Indian Health Council. Mm-hmm. I don't know what exactly, I think maybe just my effort, I was awarded for that. And I was so humbled and honored to be acknowledged that way, because I don't ever expect it. And when it does happen, I'm just blown away. So,
yeah. Well, you've done a lot. And I know I've seen the charitable efforts that your tribe has made to help some of these various causes of, I think it was it addiction and
veterans, homelessness.
Homelessness, you know, yeah.
The really cool thing is that given that we do generate revenue, we're able to give back to the communities. We just are working with Sharp Grossmont Hospital on a contribution. Hopefully it will help. I know the beds are at a 0% capacity, and,
yes,
and it means a lot to us to be able to give back to something like that. That's going to help many people, not just myself or my people, but many people across, you know, the city, across the county of San Diego.
Well, that's a wonderful thing to do. I want to circle back for just a second to the appointment of Deb Holland for Secretary of the Interior. Can you give us some specifics of some of the things that you or others in the Native American community are hoping that she may do that will be different than what we've seen from some of the prior Secretaries of the Interior, particularly maybe the current administration, especially? What kind of a contrast can we expect?
Well, when you have somebody in a position such as a Secretary of the Interior, someone who looks like you and understands the challenges that we face as American Indian people, such as Deb Holland. She's from New Mexico, and she understands what we face, you know, land in the trust issues, funding issues, healthcare issues.
Respect for the environment. And
environment. Yeah. That's one thing she did talk about preserving coastal places and planting 30 million trees, I think it was, by the year 2030.
Wow.
And so forth. So she's all about the environment. She carries a torch for all the issues that we face, and she understands. So I think that with that better understanding comes, you know, more room for better decisions that service all American Indian people. And I don't think that was an understanding that, you know, the past representatives in that position had. But she comes with all of that. She comes as a tribal person, which I greatly respect. She's respected in the Indian community. And I'm just looking forward to working with her because we could really use some land in the trust. And hopefully, you know, she'll be able to help tribes with that, with getting some land back.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you have the last word today, Chairwoman Pinto. What else would you like people in East County to know that we haven't already talked about today?
Well, it's not going to be about myself, right? I'm not
I'll leave that open-ended.
Okay, it's open-ended. You know what I want? I know this year has been very challenging for all of us.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving was a lot different this year. I know families weren't together and it's just tough. And Christmas, there will be time that we get to gather. I look forward to that. And right now, I think we could only do what's right and do our part in making sure that we, you know, kick this virus. I'm sorry, but we just need to get rid of it. And so we can be together. And so you can come out and visit us at the rooftop. And so we can hug each other again and not have Zoom malfunctions and people get upset. But I can't wait for that to happen. I just want people to do their part. And let's all be there for each other, because it's really, I can see a lot of people struggling. You know, some of my elders struggle in having a hard time and not having that human contact. So let's be gentle on each other and respect each other, whether you believe in Christmas or whether you believe in happy holidays or whatever you celebrate and believe in. I just wish that we all would respect one another, as I feel like under this administration, it wasn't always that way or enforced or encouraged. And so my hope is we do that in a new year. And I know there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and I know we'll get through it. And I just want people to hang in there.
Well, those are very wise words. And I certainly agree with that message for the new year. Eric, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is John Fisteer with a weather report for East County. East County's mountains received their first snowfall of the season to end 2020. 5 inches of snow fell on Mount Laguna on Wednesday, December 29th, with snow also falling in Cuyamaca, Julian, and other higher elevation areas. A snow jam forced closure of Sunrise Highway when, despite stay-home orders, motorists flocked to the mountain areas in hopes of frolicking in the snow. The first week of the new year will bring mostly drier weather, although there is a chance of rain midweek, with low temperatures remaining below freezing in the mountain areas.
Next up, we'll have some national news headline stories from Public News Service, including efforts to increase the stimulus checks in Congress and the latest election challenges.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
I have no doubt that Joe Biden will be confirmed by the acceptance of the vote of this Electoral College as the 46th President of the United States.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi dismissed Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley's pledge to challenge President-elect Joe Biden's win in five battleground states on January 6, when both houses of Congress meet to validate Electoral College votes. Several House Republicans say they'll do the same, while other Republicans are suing Vice President Mike Pence directly, arguing that he has constitutional power to accept or reject the votes from any state he chooses. Political scientist Ken Coleman from the University of Michigan says it's all political posturing for the next round of elections.
Anything that Pence does or anything that would not involve the House of Representatives voting affirmatively for something would be unconstitutional and revolutionary. So it's just sort of a political theater moment.
Trump has been both a blessing and a curse for the Republican Party, adds Coleman.
He stirs up the base and brings in the money, but he's also the main reason they lost the presidency.
Stirring things up in Georgia, Trump is calling on the state's Republican Governor Brian Kemp to resign from office. Heavyweights from both parties are campaigning there. Tomorrow is the last day for early voting in Georgia before next Tuesday's election. Also on Wednesday, Speaker Pelosi said she will seat the Republican winner of a contested Iowa race when the House reconvenes Sunday. A recount brought the race down to a six-vote difference. Democrat Rita Hart's campaign petitioned the House rather than going to court. In the Senate, Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the efforts to increase direct stimulus payments to $2,000 have, quote, no realistic path to quickly pass the Senate, unquote.
The Senate's not going to be bullied into rushing out more borrowed money into the hands of Democrat rich friends who don't need the help.
McConnell is holding out for two of Trump's demands, addressing so-called election fraud and removing legal protections for content on tech platforms. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats aren't giving up.
We can get this done, but Leader McConnell has to get out of the way, allow the House-passed bill on the floor.
Greg Nassif is with the political nonprofit Humanity Forward, which has called for direct cash payments.
$600 is not enough after 9 months of nothing. This is not enough for rent in most places.
Nassif explains Americans who received a cash payment from the first stimulus package put the money back into the economy.
There's no doubt that it made a difference in a lot of lives. It was a great example of how we can help our economy from the ground up.
Lastly, the Associated Press reports the Census Bureau will likely miss today's deadline to submit the numbers used for redistricting congressional seats. If they're not ready until after the inauguration on January 20th, the delay could undermine Trump's plan to exclude undocumented citizens from the count. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year.
During the holiday season, many people make charitable contributions, but there's another way to help the community recover from COVID-19 without spending a dime. Groups that work for social justice say you can make a difference by choosing a financial institution based on the causes they support. Ebony Perkins with Self-Help Federal Credit Union says there is power in where you put your money.
Placing your money with financial institutions that are making a difference in communities that are specifically hurting right now, that's also a form of giving, and that should not be overlooked.
Self-Help makes home and consumer loans where other financial institutions won't, specifically focusing on low-income, minority, and rural communities. They also offer certificates of deposit that support women and other underserved borrowers and tailor their federally backed paycheck protection loans to nonprofits. Barbara Bunn McCullough is CEO of Brighter Beginnings, which runs a child development center, offers financial counseling, and runs low-cost medical clinics in the East Bay. She says their revenue plunged during the pandemic and forced them to lay off 7 people.
But with the Paycheck Protection Loan, we were able to not only bring everyone back, but we have since added 20 more staff. We are growing and serving more people than ever before.
Rafael Morales, also with Self-Help, says the company advocates for policy change to benefit working families, especially in communities of color.
Our priorities around advocacy are expanding homeownership, criminal justice reform, student debt crisis, and living wage campaigns.
The goal of community development credit unions is to provide affordable financial services that help generate economic growth for communities that have been ignored by traditional banks. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Estrella County Park is now open in Casa de Oro. The county's newest public park has been decades in the making since the county has owned the land since 1977, but the project was put on hold until funds became available. Built into a hillside to preserve wetlands, the park includes a trail, picnic tables, and an amphitheater, as well as play spaces built from natural materials, including a suspension bridge, log wall, and climbing tree stump, as well as swings and slides. The new park provides a much-needed space for children to play and area residents to walk dogs on leashes amid a pandemic where few other recreational opportunities are available. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The San Diego County Fire Authority has a new name. It's now the San Diego County Fire Protection District. The San Diego Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, voted unanimously on December 7th in favor of creating the special district. Herman Reddick, the district's director, says, quote, "The San Diego County Fire Protection District has been a long time coming," end quote. According to Reddick, in the last 5 years, San Diego County Fire has been able to make significant improvements by increasing permanent career staffing and the assignment of paramedics at San Diego County Fire Protection District stations, and increasing the level of services provided to county residents. CAL FIRE and San Diego Fire Chief Tony Meacham said the actions to create the new district helped to correct a decision made in the 1970s when the County of San Diego terminated the contract with California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection for fire services. He says, quote, Supervisor Diane Jacob and LAFCO began working on this issue in 1993, and after 27 years, the fire district has become a reality. Last year, the voters in San Diego voted in favor of adding fire protection services to the San Diego County Charter. These two actions will ensure that fire protection services will always be provided across our 1.7 million acre service area, he adds. The San Diego County Fire Protection District is comprised of elements from both the state of California and the County of San Diego working together as a single organization. More than 500 personnel operate 35 fire stations countywide. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Estrella County Park is now open in Casa de Oro. The county's newest public park has been decades in the making since the county has owned the land since 1977, but the project was put on hold until funds became available. Built into a hillside to preserve wetlands, the park includes a trail, picnic tables, and an amphitheater, as well as play spaces built from natural materials, including a suspension bridge, log wall, and climbing tree stump, as well as swings and slides. The new park provides a much-needed space for children to play and area residents to walk dogs on leashes amid a pandemic where few other recreational opportunities are available. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. At KNSJ, our mission is to reflect voices and views across our diverse region. That's why our programming includes Native American news, Spanish language programming, coverage of issues facing immigrants, refugees, the homeless, working people, inner city and rural residents, and others whose voices are too often not heard in other media. Please help support and sustain KNSJ, your network for social justice, by donating or making a sustaining pledge at www.knsj.org.